Donald on a Kitchen talks about food. Donald on a Kitchen talks recipes. Donald on a Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. The Donald on a Kitchen show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. More information can be found at www.themuckyduckpub.com or from Marcus at telephone number 232-8888. Welcome to the Donna Lana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
And this is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We gather here once a week to talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinion. And this is community radio. Yeah, it's a good place to be.
Well, this is especially a good time to be talking about food. We are at the peak of our harvesting season.
This is the kind of season where you don't just get one tomato. I'm getting like pails full a day, and it's so nice to
share. Well, Lana planted 31 varieties of tomatoes. I mean, even with some drop off, you're bound to end up with a lot of tomatoes.
And I do feed the groundhog. He's out there chewing on the ones on the bottom. So I've been doing a lot of things with tomatoes. We are going to be talking about putting food by, taking the end of summer and putting it places.
It's a big responsibility to eat all that food.
Oh, it is. It is. I hate to waste things. So today's topic is things in jars. We are looking for jars. And actually last year was a challenge too. This year, finding canning jars and canning lids.
I was wondering how that was going. Not any better than last year. There's a shortage of canning, the lids particularly.
It's because it's perfectly fine to reuse those nice jelly jars and quart jars and pint jars.
The glass part.
The glass part, yes. But one should buy new lids because they do rust a bit. I have not been able to. Maybe about a month and a half ago, I did score a couple of little boxes of just the lids, not the screw part, but the lids. But I have.
Well, and you need that to seal,
yes,
right?
Yes, you do.
Because you need the intact, the little rubbery bit that's on it.
You do. And so every time I've been in the grocery, so you get when to get more. And, it's never know. However, I have noticed that.
So this goes along with the national computer chip shortage.
It must be. Boy, the standards across the nation are just hitting the skids, folks, I tell you. If you can't get your canning jars, things are not good. Although, in my experience, I have been noticing more flats of jars and lids together. So there have been some jelly jar flats. There have been quarts and pints. Yes, if you want to buy the whole thing, but they, as any kind of economy goes, they are getting a bit pricey. That's why I like to reuse what I can.
Yes, they are.
That's what I like to reuse what I can. And putting things in jars, matter of fact, I've got jars washed and turned upside down and waiting on my counter. It's time to make some bread and butter pickles, and I'll make some this afternoon. And
now, do you just hot pack those?
Yeah. Oh no!
You have to process.
I process them in a hot water bath because I want those to kind of last a while. And I've got quite a bit of okra. Although this is a dry year for the garden, there is a bit of okra coming.
We are going to have okra pickles. Lana's famous okra pickles.
Yeah. See, I think ahead. Think ahead to the winter potlucks. And nothing is better than taking something off the shelf that you don't have to cook right then and take it to the potluck. Oh, it's Lana's pickles again. Well, as long as people like them, I'll keep making them. And I do like okra pickles, especially I use a bread and butter pickle recipe. And the recipe that I use is on, believe it or not, it's on the Donna Lana Kitchen website. Look for bread and butter zucchini pickles or something like that.
And you just use the same thing with the okra instead of the zucchini.
Yep. And I usually just like to slide a little hot pepper in each jar.
Now, what was that hot pepper that you showed me the other day that was really pretty? Slightly purplish.
Purpley and good and pretty is important. I found a variety that I've been growing for quite a few years called Czech Black. And it is a looks sort of like a stubby jalapeno pepper. And it goes from green to dark, dark purple black really quickly. And it stays on the vine for a long, long, long time. And they're lovely.
Does it get less heat as it sits on the vine or
no,
more?
It gets more heat as it hits on the vine. So, and actually, just before it falls off, it does turn a dark, dark red. But they're good anytime, so they're kind of, I enjoy drying those because I'm not a big eat hot pepper out of hand, but it's good. And I will probably put half of one of those in each one of my jars of okra pickles, so.
Oh, so a little heat from that.
Yeah, a little heat, yeah.
They're sturdy like the jalapenos are, so they're good for that.
Yeah, so that's Czech Black, and I got the seeds originally from Seed Savers Exchange, and maybe I like them because they last a long time. The shelf life in the refrigerator is very good, and also they're pretty, and they're just about the kind of heat that I like. Everybody's got their own theory about what's a hot pepper, but I like that one. I like that one.
Now, I cooked this weekend with a lot of shishito peppers, which we've talked about those before. I really, really like them. They're also small. Mm-hmm. But they're thin-walled, unlike this Czech Black or a jalapeno. And there's something and they're not very hot until they are. There's something odd about them. Like one out of every 20 or 30 has a little heat to them, but the rest of the time you don't get any heat. But all I did was put them in a dry skillet and let them kind of blister on one side and flip them over. No oil necessary. And then I used them on a garnish that for a dish that was like, I think, polenta and lamb stew. But this time of year, those shishitos are coming on, and they're real, real nice. I've seen them at the farmer's market.
Yes, I was turned on to those a few years ago. I'd never heard
of them.
Have
a nice pepper flavor, really without the heat.
Very good. And in my experience, my goodness, they do produce. One plant will put out lots of those little shishito peppers, and you can just keep
more,
on
more so than the black Czech?
A black Czech is, those two do good too. But I think for the bulk of pepper, considering the shishitos are a little longer, and you get a lot more of the
shishito
peppers.
Well, they probably grow faster because they're not so heavy.
Yeah, they do. I find there's a lot on a plant. So this is a good time of year. Yes, it is.
Are you getting red peppers yet?
Yes, I am.
Oh, finally.
There's all kinds of,
sweet ones?
Yes.
This is that is the one thing that when I can have a lot of sweet red peppers, I am just ecstatic.
Yes. I grow the bell sort of peppers that are red. Now, let the peppers turn to red. They're ever so much better. Yes, they are. And there's some other varieties that are red, too. Although I grow one that is called a sweet banana, and that is, it never gets, well, it gets
is that the
orange-ish.
Light green one?
Yeah, light green one.
Yeah, I like
it. It gets sort of orangish if you leave it, but that's a nice sweet pepper, too. Well, you made something this week. Donna was cooking up a storm this week because she had people to feed, and she tell us about mustard ice cream, Donna.
Oh, this is a lovely little trick, and for the group that I was feeding, it was very well received because they go, "Are we having dessert for the first course?" I said, "No, it's mustard ice cream,"
and they went, "Donna, what did you do?"
Well, they just kind of like looked at me. So the original recipe I got from a book by Susan Herman Loomis, and it's based on she's an American who writes about French food. So she found this at a famous Parisian French restaurant. And basically it's you make a gazpacho and then you make this ice cream separately. Now, mustard ice cream, it looks like vanilla ice cream, basically, but it's not. You take your basic custard recipe for any ice cream base, including vanilla, which is eggs, cream, and milk, and sugar, but you omit the sugar. This is not a sweet ice cream. So it's just your eggs and cream and milk, and you, you know, kind of stir it till it comes to a little boil and thickens up, and then you strain it to get the icky bits out in case there's some coagulated egg or something in there. And then once it's strained and starting to cool, you just put in a couple of tablespoons, of mustard, of a French, like a Grey Poupon, a classic French, not the grainy one, but the, you know, the regular French mustard. I suppose you could put the American mustard in it, but I think it might be, I've only made it with the French mustard, and I put maybe just a pinch of salt, but not much. And then you just, you know, process it in your ice cream maker, whatever kind you have. And so you've got the ice cream, and then underneath it, whatever your favorite gazpacho recipe is. But I also find this time of year, if I get like some of your lovely heirloom tomatoes in different colors, like the red, the yellow, the green, and I just slice them up in kind of bite-sized pieces, not too small, because I want to see the colors. And then I think I put a bit of chopped fresh basil. And then if you put salt and pepper, a little olive oil, and let it sit for about 20 minutes, the tomatoes just like juice out. I guess it's the salt pulling the liquids out of the tomatoes after you cut them. And I think this time I was doing it with Lana's tomatoes, and they were so good, I really did not want to adulterate the flavor. You could throw a splash of sherry vinegar, but I wouldn't push it too far because the tomatoes themselves right now are just such perfection. So I made up the tomato, you know, had them all cut up and let them soup out a little bit. Then I just took a regular bowl and ladled some of the tomato and the juices in, and then you plop a scoop of ice cream on top of it. And then, of course, while you're eating it, the ice cream or the cream begins to melt into the gazpacho, and it's really quite yummy. So it's a fun thing, especially if you're having a little dinner party or something. And it's a very kind of do ahead thing. I mean, you can't do the tomatoes too far ahead, but you can do them before the guests arrive, and then you just whip it out, and it's a little bit of a conversation piece.
It is mustard ice cream. Good idea. Lots of good things. Oh, and also, sometimes I get to taste. I didn't get to taste any mustard ice cream. I've had it in the past. But this time I got a taste of something else you made this week. Talk about your pound cake.
Oh, so I was kind of doing this all as much as possible Iowa dinner, right? So I wanted to use the black currant sauce that I had made earlier from the Berry Patch sauce, and I wanted to put whipped cream on it. So I'd made a black currant coulis, which is, it's a strong fruit, you know, but you don't need much of it. And coulis is like a light fruit sauce kind of. Or a runny-ish a little bit, you know, mm-hmm. a very wet sauce, usually of fruit. So with that, I wanted to make the whipped cream flavored with the leaves of the black currant plant, which tastes nothing like the fruit, right? Okay. The black currant plant, when you make the whipped cream with it, you just pick the leaves and you kind of lightly simmer the leaves in the cream, then let it cool, then whip it with a little sugar, right? So it's, how to describe that flavor? It's not vanilla.
No.
But it's in that field, you know, something subtle, something, it's not really floral. It's just a really unusual flavor. So underneath this whipped cream and black currant coulis, you got to have a cake. You got to have something, you know. You can't just serve a plate of whipped cream and berry sauce. So I made a lard buttermilk pound cake.
Ha!
I have to say, I think this is going to be my go-to recipe for kind of quick and easy but spectacular. I will put the recipe up. It's basically you let everything come to room temperature like you do with any old pound cake. You know, you just let it sit out on the counter for a while, and then you cream the lard and the sugar, and all in one bowl. It's really easy. Then you add eggs and cream them in, and then you add buttermilk. And then you add flour, and we use the Iowa, you know, from the early morning harvest pastry flour, I think I used, or white unbleached. Anyway, one of the lighter flours. And I used lard from Cindy and Vic Madsen's pigs, and the Kelowna buttermilk. The sugar, of course, you know, has to be. I could try it with honey sometime, but anyway, I use sugar. And then for flavoring, it said, oh, put some either vanilla extract or lemon. So I actually went for both. I used some vanilla extract, but I also used a thing that we've talked about before called Fiori di Sicilia, which means flowers of Sicily. It's something you can buy on the King Arthur baking website. It's a little tiny bottle. It's a strong flavor, so the first time you use it, just put a drop because you can use too much. But it is a sort of lemon vanilla-ish combination, and it is a lovely flavor. So the pound cake, you know, needs some. You could use lemon extract, or you know, you could grate lemon peel in or something. But I use the Fiori di Sicilia and some extra vanilla. And the only thing disconcerting about it is, of course, because you're using lard, the cake is more white and less yellow than you would expect from a pound cake. But what'd you think of it, Lana?
Oh, the flavor and the taste of this is really good. I don't know. Could I taste the Fiori di Sicilia? I don't know.
Oh, well, I tried to keep it just under
it's
that.
Just really good.
Yeah, it has a nut.
Really,
you know, good. You don't want it to. Oh, this has Fiori di Sicilia in it. No, it has a subtle
really
undertone.
It's really good.
And the texture with the lard was really, really nice. And
yes.
I have to say, you know, I didn't do anything fancy. I just baked it in a loaf pan. And the fact that you can do it all in one bowl, just keep beating and whop it together and throw it in the oven, it was just a delight.
Very good.
Yeah, it's going to replace the olive oil cake that I've made for years.
Yeah, that lard pound cake and three cheers for Iowa lard because...
Yes, and lard, actually, if you're... you know, I don't think I would buy the industrial lard that you can buy, you know, in the regular grocery stores because they do add a lot of preservatives and all kinds of things and stuff. But there are plenty of local places to get lard. Probably, I'm guessing the Story City Locker has it. I'm guessing some of the farmers, anybody who's butchering pigs and selling pork is probably got lard for sale.
Yes, it's worth asking for at your meat department and ask where those pigs have been. Yes, it's nice to have a good, healthy bunch of lard. Yes, it is. Good. Well, we're saying this is a bountiful time of year, and when life gives you pears, you make lemonade. No, you make pear stuff. I had a wonderful encounter with a whole wheelbarrow full, almost, of pears that a neighbor family brought over to our farm. Here, we don't know. We have a tree. We just moved here. We have this tree, and it's doing this stuff. It's making pears, and we don't know what to do with them. We've eaten ourselves sick. Well, eating yourself sick on pears is not a bad thing this time of year. But, my goodness, they were... A lot.
A lot of beautiful pears. I think they were Seckel pears.
They were small too.
And the right color and the right texture.
Yeah,
it's kind of unknown, but we determined that perhaps these are Seckel pears, which are a real treat.
A real treat. They were kind of green and hard when I got them in. The peeling was a little bitter, but once they got ripe, just eating them out of hand was really good.
You know, there is that old saying, a perfect pear lasts only about 10 minutes.
Yes, it does.
I mean, because it goes from not quite, and then it's perfect, and then after that it's mushy and soggy, and the fruit flies have a field day with it. But
oh, gosh.
So anyway, you had a lot of pears.
A lot of pears. So what does one
even,
do?
Even her dog
what
was eating the pears.
What does one do with pears? Well.
A lot.
A lot. I made pear butter and pear jam and pear juice and pear sauce. And why not? Why not?
And we're gonna have a live tasting.
We are. Let's get into the jam here.
Which one is the jam? This is the jam. So and Lana brought me in something to taste, and I'm going to taste it for you.
Pear sections with balsamic vinegar and
pear
spices.
Pear sections?
Well, it's supposed to have pear chunks in it, which it does, but you have to cook it down quite a bit.
This is a jelly.
Yeah, it's a jelly.
You ran it through a jelly bag.
Yeah. No, I didn't. No, not at all.
How'd you get it clear? It's all juice.
Well, I'll read the recipe, and this is from, we talk about this.
Oh, there, I got a chunk.
Make Whole Pictures,
beautiful.
The Gems and Jellies of Christine Ferber. This, believe it or not, is a 2 or 3 day process.
I believe it.
Yeah,
it's quite good.
Because you macerate, which I had to look up to figure out what that meant. You macerate pear slices in sugar and...
Oh. That means you cut them up and let them sit there.
Sugar and honey. And let them sit.
Sugar and honey.
Yeah.
This has a lot of nice spicy.
Comes late.
I'm ready for the pork roast and put a little of this either as a glaze or on the side.
This has got sugar, honey, balsamic vinegar, cinnamon stick, star anise, peppercorns and cardamom in it.
Oh, it's delicious.
It's a little... Pears are kind of just pearish, but this has got a lot of oomph with it.
Right. This is going to take us through Christmas.
It's got that kind of a winter taste. And
good job, Lana. It's delicious.
A couple of years ago, you gave me turned me on to red peppercorns.
Pink peppercorns.
They're not, evidently you said they're not real.
They are not really a peppercorn, but they do have a spicy, it's the flower from a little tree that grows, well, we used to have one in our backyard in Southern California. They're very droopy trees, sort of like, they're not willows, they're peppercorn trees, or they're pink peppercorn trees, but the flowers then turn into these pink peppercorns that have a very specific flavor.
Yeah, they're not like a black pepper, but I thought, well, let's just put them in here instead.
So into this jam?
Yes.
Oh, nice.
Why not? Okay. So how did this? You peel the peppers and core them.
Pears, dear.
And let them macerate overnight in all of this stuff, the honeys and the sugars. And then that, without ever doing anything, that sucks quite a bit of the moisture out. So you end up with pear chunks.
Pear-flavored glop.
Then you pour that through a strainer into my jelly making pan, get the pear slices out of there, and then cook down this glop.
So that's why it looks so clear like a jelly.
And then at that time you add the balsamic vinegar. So for like...
Okay, so that's an uncooked maceration that you're putting through the jelly bag.
Yep.
Interesting. Huh? Yeah.
It's kind of a fuss.
You know why it's a good idea to do that? Although these pears, these supposedly Seckel pears, did not have that much of that grainy quality. Some pears have a lot of graininess to it that if you don't filter that out, by the time you've gone to all the work of making like a pear butter, it's not pleasant on the tongue.
It's greedy. Then by the end of cooking down the liquid to a jelly consistency, use your thermometer.
So did you have to add pectin to it at that point?
Did I? Oh, I made a double recipe, so I did. Then you can put the pear chunks back in, although they're pretty much macerated. So there is a thickness of those.
But you don't put them all back in.
Yeah.
Oh, you do?
Oh, because believe it or not, they just kind of suck down to not much at all.
Oh, really? So you strain them out and then put them back in?
After the liquid is really reduced. There you go. Huh.
Okay, technique I have never seen before.
Yeah, this is it's kind of an interesting fussy project. But,
and do the spices go in during the boiling process?
Maceration process.
So
they get boiled too, except you add the balsamic at the end.
At the end of the boiling period.
Yeah. But you do have to bring it back to a boil.
Okay.
I mean, but it doesn't boil. Oh, and like I said, this is from.
Well, I hope you. I hope you have a bit of this stuff. It's pretty darn good.
I made a couple jars. We'll see what you get for Christmas
from that wheelbarrow full of.
Yeah. Well, because I made other things too, and we will talk more about other pear things. But for right now, this is KHOI, and you're listening to the Don Alana Kitchen Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. That was a shot-ish. I hope you danced around the kitchen table with your cat there or your loved one, whoever's in the kitchen with you right now. So we've been talking about summer things and things to put in jars, and we've been talking about pear jelly, pear jam. I've got a pear vinegar and spices. It's sort of a jam. It's sort of a jelly. It's got chunks, but it's kind of pretty, too. So that was good, and we'll talk about more pear stuff. Let's take a trip to the Don Alana Kitchen Archives. From the summer of 2018, we talk about a treat from a farmer's market at that time, from the 2018 farmer's market. We talk about Donna's pear butter, some hot pepper advice from me, and comments by Evan Taylor, who was our engineer at the time, and all-purpose taste tester, and we're going to employ Mike as our taste tester now. But this is from Don Alana Kitchen Archives, 2018. We like to talk about good food. I have a farmer's market note here. It's the kind of sliding out of summer into fall. Good things are happening there.
Squash!
Oh, apples. And there's some good bakery happening there. I happen to have a very, very nice treat. It's always good to get a treat there. I would highly like to recommend, and I wouldn't think I'd like this, but here it is, black pepper thyme shortbread.
I had one, too. It's delicious. Of course, I love shortbread. But this one, really, she said, you'll have to say who the maker is. Yeah,
the baker is Melissa Boker.
And she told me that she made them because she wanted a slightly savory one to go, like on cheese boards and things like that. And it's a very good idea. They are still sweet and mm-hmm. really delicious, even as a cookie, though, I have to say.
And the black pepper really kind of...
Very nicely seasoned.
It makes
job.
You stand up and take notes, and it's great with coffee. But I had it probably the more proper way, considering it's shortbread, with some good strong tea this weekend. And black pepper in your shortbread. You learn new things all the time. We're going to find out what's cooking here in Central Iowa?
A lot right now, right?
Okay, we're going to talk
about... It is the time. Put it in the jars right now.
Yes, we're going to talk about pears and peppers. And Donna, let's talk about pears and some other good stuff that we're putting by for winter.
Yes, well, Helen Gunderson's neighbor, and I can't remember the name of the lady, has a pear tree. It's somewhere out in Burnett or neighborhood street or something. So I got a bunch of pears. And I thought, okay, what am I going to do with them? So I started cooking them down. And they were so good. But I couldn't find my jelly bag. So I really wanted to make jelly because they were just really subtle and beautiful in mm-hmm. the jelly stage. But failing that, I continued to boil them down, ran them through the food processor, and then put them in the slow cooker to make pear butter.
Oh, good. Slow cooker.
So it came out really good. We have to taste it. I put a little something in it besides the pears, and they are so sweet, Lana. There's no sugar in it, though. Can you taste what I put in it?
It's some sort of herby thing, some sort of greenish thing.
We got a lot of basil right now.
Basil.
So I put some basil in it. Here, Evan, I want you to taste it, too. But I tried to keep the basil flavor kind of a little bit subliminal
because you don't want to, are so
right,
good.
You don't want to scream basil, mm-hmm. but I thought it gave it another nice layer of flavor. What do you think, Evan?
I think that's terrific.
Very autumnal, right?
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, there's like just that subtle kind of layer of earthiness that you're getting
something
from the basil,
else.
You know,
it's
Like you said, it's sweet and it's tart, and the texture is really nice. You know, it's like it's sort of like a more pear oriented version of texture of like real applesauce. You know,
yeah, and no sugar in it. It's really sweet for you. Isn't that amazing?
That's fantastic.
Yes, it's very good.
All right, Evan, you won the jackpot. You get to take the jar of pear basil butter home with you.
Oh, lucky me! Thank you so much.
Warning: it's also good on a little vanilla ice cream.
Uh-oh. Something for me and my girlfriend.
Yes, that's right. Good. They're big ice cream eaters. There you go.
I want to mention, define a few terms here. Dan talked about jelly, jam. Jelly is the clear stuff.
There's jelly, jam, and butter.
Right, right. And jelly is, she's going to drip things off and just get the clear juice, which can be lovely.
Oh, but because it really was just so delicate.
And jam would be thickening up the chunks, mm-hmm. and butter is just cooking the dickens out of it.
Yep, so like apple butter, only this is pear butter.
Ah, very good, very good. I also put things in jars this week.
Oh, yeah, this looks beautiful.
I had a whole lot of peppers left, and I don't make this every year, but here I did again.
Is it hot? I'm about to taste it.
It's hot. It's,
Oh, yum.
Yeah.
Yum.
Hot pepper. Now, I'm calling it hot pepper sauce. It depends. The years that it comes out thicker, I'll call it hot pepper jam. But it is hot pepper sauce. It's about one-third hot peppers, two-thirds sweet peppers. And my hot peppers, I don't use the killer peppers. I have a kind of medium bunch of peppers that I really like called Osolitos. I got them from...
What are they called?
Osolitos. They were from...
What color were they?
They're kind of like a long, red, pointy bell. Kind of a lumpy sort of thing. I got them from the Seed Savers Exchange, and they are a medium hot pepper. Now, you can make this as hot as you want, and so that's what I did.
Yeah, but you know what? Oh, boy, it's hot. Here we go. Cough, cough, cough.
notice the label. It says hot pepper sauce. I did not
say, but it's not that hot.
But, well, actually, you probably, instead of like taking the whole spoonful, Donna, it would have been nice with a cracker or a little bit of cheese.
Yeah, on the cheese plate. Another one for the cheese plate. However, I have to say, if you follow Lana's proportions, which were two-thirds sweet pepper to mm-hmm. one-third hot pepper, mm-hmm. it has a full pepper flavor. Mm-hmm. And the heat... Sometimes with hot pepper jellies, The heat overwhelms mm-hmm. absolutely every other flavor mm-hmm. in the jar. This is not true for this recipe. This is right. excellent.
And this is not a jelly. This is, has got the whole pepper in it. Right. And also it has, I had a little trick here. It has a, for a, each batch that I make, I put in a whole lime because I'm putting this through the food processor.
Oh, lime. What a good idea.
Food processor. And I go, why just put the juice in? You're going to chop things up anyway. So I just put the whole lime in.
Oh, you put the whole lime in?
Yeah, I did. Why
not? Oh, so you cook it down and then you put it through the food processor?
No. I grind all my stuff beforehand.
In the food processor and then cook.
And then cook. So you end up with ground up peppers, ground up. A little bit of lime, sugar, some apple cider vinegar.
Mm. Not much, though.
No, not much. Uh-huh. And that just cooks down. And
so no liquid other than what's in the vegetables.
Right.
Excellent.
And
and what's your sugar ratio, sort of?
Let me think. It was like 5 cups of ground up
vegetables,
and 2 cups of sugar.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And then how much vinegar sort of to that? She's counting on her fingers.
3/4 cups.
Okay.
And I don't measure very
well. Plus the lime juice.
Plus the lime juice, yeah. So that's about it for a batch, and it's good. And it depending on what's in your garden, there it is.
So you just cook it down and plop it in the jar.
Yeah, right.
So it's fairly finely ground in the food processor.
A trick. I got this recipe from my sister-in-law, and she suggested, I don't know where she got the recipe, freeze your peppers beforehand, and because it's frozen, it ends up being semi-chunky as opposed to, it has a little texture to it.
It does have a little texture.
That's
but
good. Anyway, enjoy all the stuff that you can put in jars this time of
year. Right now I have it at home working the end of the tomatoes, so I cook them down, put them through the food mill, which is, you know, where you just hand crank it and it kind of
the Foley food mill.
Actually it's not even that. Is that the one, the conical one?
No, the conical one is the conical one.
With the conical wooden mortar thing that I got from my mother,
who probably had it for
75 years. Anyway, it works. So I run it through that. That pulls out the skins and the seeds. And then I put it in the slow cooker. And so I wanted something sort of ketchupy, but not ketchup. So I have a lot of Thai basil. So I put in a lot of Thai basil, some chopped onions, what else? Salt, pepper, a little bit of Aleppo pepper. So it has a little heat, but not too much. A tiny bit of sugar, like maybe a tablespoon. And I'm cooking that down with five spice powder.
Ah.
So,
yeah.
It should be good. Another thing for the cheese plate.
That'll be
good.
Or
on sandwiches. I think I'll have hamburgers tonight with that. Uh-huh. Instead of ketchup.
See, ketchup is so, it's dependable.
It's overrated.
Dependable, but overrated. There's other sauces. The hot pepper sauce is good on.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, I think we've had fun in the kitchen this week. It's been fun to kind of cook things down. Oh, it is fun to work in the kitchen. Yes, it is. And using Donna as my inspiration, I took some of that pear stuff. It looked awful lot like pear sauce when I cooked down just the pears. And I have a food mill, too, that I can run things through, and it takes out the insides and it takes out the
Take out the icky bits.
And I put it, as she suggested, in a slow cooker. I put it in a crock pot, and Be patient. This took 3 days because I didn't want to leave it on high all the time because I thought, well, I'm not going to don't want to burn or anyway. It's going to burn. But so it was 3 days, believe it or not. Stir it every now and then. And I
did you leave it on at night?
I did.
Yeah.
Low all night. Nothing's happening. Give Mike a taste.
Give Mike a taste.
We've got some.
All right. I'm being a piggy here. It's really good. I mean, it's just a classic. Here you go, Mike. Try the pear butter. So what'd you season this? I mean, this tastes just like really good pear. And, of course, it has a little of the crunchy pear stuff in it. You're not going to mistake it for apple butter.
No, it's not apple butter. I put a little apple cider vinegar in it because I have made apple butter before that has called for molasses and apple cider vinegar. And it cooks down. It gets dark. It gets dark. It gets dark. And it's got a little, it has some sugar in it. It has some.
Oh, so you had, you did add sugar.
Not much. In a crock pot full, I'd say there's less than a cup, just to say I did. And that's about it. And,
did you put a pinch of salt and butter in it or not?
I didn't put any butter in. I did salt it.
I mean salt and pepper, sorry.
Yeah, I did put salt and pepper in it.
Yeah. I always put a little black pepper in my fruit. It's just.
I know. It seems a good thing
to
do.
Yeah, it just kind of makes it have a little kick that you don't. You don't taste it, but you feel it.
Yeah. And then, besides pear butter, I also have made a batch of just drained out the pear juice after cooking down all the chunks of what I had left over of pears. And since these were such good pears, the pears are going to be really good. Dripped it overnight in a jelly bag.
Sugar or no?
No sugar in that.
No
sugar. I put it in a very clean plastic milk carton and put it in the freezer because I'm later I'll do some more jelly. But I plan on playing around with some things to add to that pear juice, such as, well, that you suggested lemon verbena. That might be good. And
oh, for a jelly. Be delicious. Jelly.
And I
wanted with a little black pepper.
Okay. All right. I'm going to write that down. And there is also rose geranium leaves to put in. And that makes a really nice jelly.
Oh, yeah. A whole another different direction. Or even that juice, you got a whole gallon of it.
Yeah.
Oh, we could do some Christmas beverages with it.
Well,
even.
Let's, boy. Yeah, all those amazing things that kind of end up in the corner of. And remember, folks, label this stuff. Label it. It is labeled in my freezer. Pear juice, August.
Yes, 2021. Name and date.
Yes, yes. And it will come back to you, but at least write the name of things on there. I have a little notes here. Other candidates for jars this time of year. Dried herbs are going into jars. Donna, I know you make a lot of shrubs, vinegars, and vodka infusions, and that's good for herbs, too.
Well, vinegars are easy peasy, I got to say. And this is one of the things that I try to buy some not terribly expensive, but white wine vinegar and keep a few bottles for, you know, because we're not there yet, but soon will come the frost, right? And there are certain herbs that you're going to just have to run out and pick before the heavy frost. And those can just be, I mean, they can be dried, but they're also really nice just stuffed into jars and covered with vinegar. And then you let them steep, and then you've got great Christmas presents. All the basils make great vinegars. Tarragon, of course, I do almost every year.
Yes, I look forward to. I used up the last of the tarragon vinegar.
I have to say I made a mistake this year.
Oh, what did you do?
Okay, I was doing the tarragon vinegar, and I thought, oh, why not throw in a little bit of few lemon slices? Mm. Well, I open it up 9 months later, and the lemon slices have made it go off, like it tastes spoiled. So just stick to the vinegar and the herbs, okay?
All right. Put things in jars and have a good time. Good time doing it too.
Well, and the other thing is to make vodka infusions. That's another really, really simple thing. Like, I think the one that I liked the most was when the shiso was ready. I put that in some vodka. You could do gin too, but vodka is the most neutral and readily available. And you just put that in a jar and let it, you know, sit for a few months and then decant it. And actually, we did this to some bog myrtle a few months ago that my friend Grian sent me from Woodstock, New York. And it's probably time to taste it pretty soon.
See? It's this delayed gratification. Mm-hmm. But this stuff in jars, it's a good thing. It's a thing to do this time of year. You're listening to KHOI, and this is the Donalana Kitchen. You can find out more about us and this fine radio station, lots of good local programming, at www.khoifm.org.
Now, Grandpa's going to play Storm.
Listening to the Donalana Kitchen, and that was a little bit of traditional Danish tunes, Danish dance tunes played by a Iowa native, Dwight Lam. Dwight Lam was born in Moorhead, Iowa on May 16th, 1934. He grew up playing music that was danced to in his Danish-American community and has kept it going. I've actually met this nice man. He has he's mentored a lot of people. He plays American style fiddle tunes on a fiddle, but also on a single row button diatonic accordion. That's what you've been hearing today. And his fiddle style is also often referred to as the Missouri Valley style of fiddling, or also called the North Missouri hornpipe style. But anyway, whatever it is, it's dandy to dance to. And that was a accordion tune that you just heard. It was played on a G diatonic accordion. And it's his grandfather's song. Chris Jarup was his grandfather, and that's called Chris Jarup's Storm. We'll have a bit more of Dwight Lamb's music later in the show. Donna, we've got some news items. Tick-a-tick-tick-a-tick-tick-a-tick-tick-a-tick. What do you have for us today?
Yeah, well, two different things. this was widely reported, I think, on the 18th of this month, so fairly recently. The pesticide, chlorpyrifos? Pardon me. I think they give these things names that no one will remember because they just want to confuse us. Anyway, this is a particularly nasty nerve agent. It is a pesticide. The Environmental Protection Agency issued a final rule banning all food uses of the nerve agent chlorpyrifos, right? This is a big deal. It has been banned for 20 years for, like, household use. But it's been used a lot on vegetables.
Oh, good. We eat it. Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Okay. So it's, you know, and even it's used in Iowa, some, I think, on soybean production or something. Although it's not always listed, it's in some of the compilations. So it's pretty widespread here, and it really affects children. Can cause intellectual learning disabilities. It's on fruits and vegetables, and the Earth Justice Foundation and Pesticide Action Network and others had to actually take the EPA to court. It was set to be banned, and then during the previous administration, the EPA kind of just sat on it. And they got taken to court, and the judge said, yes, this must be eliminated immediately. So that is a really good outcome for all of us and for our children, for those of us that it's not too late for. The other bit of news I saw in The Intercept this week, headline, formaldehyde causes leukemia.
Oh, great.
Okay, this is another finding that I think the EPA, they did some definitive studies during the last administration, and it came out pretty clearly negative, and they just sat on that information rather than publishing it. So now, of course, the report is being released. Formaldehyde, this has been a long-running, and it's very widespread. Building materials have
in our households, yes.
Yes, and it is one of those things that outgasses. If it's from coming out of your furniture or in construction materials, it's used a lot in particle board, for example, and those kinds of things. So there is a lot of, I mean, it's not just the undertakers that are using this, okay? So formaldehyde, clearly at this point, we now know it causes cancer. So let's factor that into when you're thinking of building with particle board or other materials that would be in a place where it's like outgassing into your home, for example, and things like that. Obviously there'll be more information forthcoming, I hope, but it's been around for a long time, and we need it to take the same path that the chlorpyrifos is. So let's find something else to use.
Well, I must say that this stuff does take an awful long time to get resolved.
You've got a couple generations that have already been affected by it. And, yeah, as Mike, our engineer, was saying, what happened to the precautionary principle, which means kind of if in doubt, don't?
We have to learn to do that.
We haven't been very good about that as a governmental application in this country. There are particularly countries in the European Union that do apply that until something is proven safe for around humans and animals and the environment in general, they don't use it. Of course, that would change our life an awful lot.
Well, we can adapt. Or if we don't adapt, maybe we'll think of the dinosaurs here,
yes, and
folks.
Those chemical lobbyists would be up in arms. But okay, anyway, we've made it with the pesticide chlorpyrifos is being very quickly phased out of use in anything to do with food, and now the EPA has released a report on formaldehyde that causes leukemia. So
okay,
there we have it. A little progress.
Let's deal with it, and I'm all for applying the precautionary principle to our lives. It's not a bad thing. Let's, you know, look.
Caution is good. Let us speak from the wisdom of our grandmotherly bodies. Caution is not, it's not like patience. It's different. My mother used to make a joke. She'd say, too much time wasted on patience, right? But caution, now that's another thing. We need to be very cautious about these.
Very good.
People selling expensive fixes that may turn out to not fix so many things.
Very good. Very good. Thanks for that information, Donna. Well, we've been talking about putting things in jars. Because it's that wonderful time of year where there's many things to put into. Oh, I want to mention ground cherries. Ground cherry jam is coming up. I'm picking, and crab apples are coming, and the apple crop is coming.
Don't we have a ground cherry pie by Sharon Rasmussen on our list of recipes?
Down on a kitchen website, and there's a ground cherry pie that you mentioned. Your lard pound cake, I believe your recipe is on there someplace. If you look for lard pound.
Oh well, I'm gonna change it because I've reformulated.
Oh
so.
Well, good. See the latest from the
test kitchens of the Donalana Kitchen Show.
Okay, there it is. Very good. Update that pound cake. So I'm looking forward to more stuff, and I know it's kind of hot time to be in the kitchen, but things need to be done.
And you can cook some of this on the back porch, too.
Yes. I want to mention an upcoming event, Bumblebees and Berries, fun for the whole family at the Jennet Heritage Area and Berry Patch Farm this weekend, Saturday, August 28th, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Get more information from Prairie Rivers of Iowa.
Yeah, so that's the Berry Patch Farm, which is just off of, there's a sign on Route 30 going east of Ames, mm-hmm. right, for the Berry Patch Farm. And while you're there, ask them how the apple season's coming.
It's coming. You've been listening to the Dunalana Kitchen. Listen to the Dunalana Kitchen Tuesdays at noon, 7 p.m., or on the KHO website anytime. Support community radio. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We had excellent engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life. We'll go out for some more music from Dwight Lamb.